Welcome to Move the Needle. This show is designed to inform, educate, motivate, and provide perspective on all things related to pharmacy provided immunization services. Let's start moving the needle. Hi, and welcome to this month's edition of the Move the Needle podcast. I'm joined today with Ed Cohen from Pharmacy Times, John Beckner from NCPA, and our special guest, Maria Lopez. As the name implies, Move the Needle is designed to inform, educate, motivate, and provide perspective on all things related to pharmacy-provided immunization services. We hope you all had a great holiday and a happy new year. For starting off this year's new episode, we're going to focus on continued immunization activity at the pharmacy with a focus on younger patients. And I'm going to let John take it away from here because there's a lot to get into.
Well, thank you, Jill, and happy new year to you. It's good to be with you again, and it's good to be with all of our listeners today. So I guess over the course of the last time frame, there's been a whole lot of activity in the pharmacy space. Pharmacists are very busy with immunizations, testing, antiviral treatments, monoclonal antibodies. And those services are really bringing in an increased number of patients to the pharmacy. In fact, these patients are really looking at the pharmacy as a destination to receive those services. And really, patients are looking at pharmacy as a one-stop shop. So a lot of activity today. I mentioned all those other things, but really a lot of activity around boosters and immunizing younger patients in pediatrics. And we're very fortunate today to have with us Maria Lopez. Maria is a doctor of pharmacy and president of Mission Wellness in the San Francisco Bay Area. And she's got a really dynamic pediatric immunization practice. Maria, thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate you being on. And what I'd love for you to do to start with is talk a little bit about your practice, and maybe you could share some experiences around providing immunizations to younger pediatric patients. We've got a number of pharmacists across the country that are excited about getting into this space. And by that, I mean offering immunizations to younger patients. So I think whatever you can share would be very beneficial to our audience. So I'll turn things over to you.
Thank you, John, for that introduction, and Happy New Year to everybody. Wow, isn't it? It's just an incredible time right now here in the United States with Omicron, surge going on. And here we are, pharmacists on the front lines. It has been quite an experience the last year, almost. We started vaccines in February of 2021. Gosh, it's hard to keep track of everything now with this pandemic. So yeah, in February 2021, we started vaccinations. We received our first supply through the local health department, and we've been vaccinating ever since. We started out in school. Well, we did them at the pharmacy, and then we had been working with a few schools on testing, and they asked, can you bring vaccines to the schools for our teachers? And in California, teachers were in the next rollout after elderly patients and healthcare workers. So we started there with some larger clinics at schools. And then as time rolled on and they opened it up to 50 and above, and then it was, 18 and above, and then 16. And we've just gone down the line providing vaccines both at the pharmacy and at school sites, really providing, vaccines in the pharmacy and then what I would call mobile vaccination clinics. We are, as of recently, a state mobile vaccination site. So we are getting some funding from the state and support to go out to sites here in the Bay Area, thus far, just the Bay Area, and provide vaccines mobily. As far as, the kids, I can definitely say, with each group that we've gone from teachers to 18-year-olds, even parents, and then 18-year-olds and down to the 12-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 12-year-olds, and then now the 5 to 11, there's always an adaptation with each group. Obviously, you know, we adapt based on developmental age and just the population. For example, you know, back in February and through April, we gave most of our vaccines outside. So we would just have lines queue up and we had tents and we gave the vaccines outside. A lot of that had to do with the fact that as we were going to the schools really didn't want our staff indoors. And then when we opened it up to 50-year-olds with parents, they didn't want the public to come in because they were really restricting who could come into the schools at that time during the pandemic. But as we got to the younger, you know, age groups, particularly 12, I said to the schools, I said, we really have to do this indoors. We need to make it comfortable for these kids. You know, it's cold outside. Here in San Francisco, the weather is cold in the summer. We get our winter in summer. And so, you know, I had to ask that we do them indoors. And so we set up indoor stations. We decorated them appropriate by age, sports memorabilia, probably for the, for the 12 and up. And then in the fall, in November, when we did the 5 to 11, we did more, age appropriate decorations. And I've talked about those, you know, putting things like Paw Patrol and Disney princesses and the sports stuff always works for any age group, but you have to put a variety because kids, some kids may not like a soccer, they hate it. And so if you're trying to give a shot, you're like, oh, look at the soccer ball. Do you like soccer? I hate soccer. You know, that's not going to work very well. So you do need a variety of decorations up. We just found that helps with the distraction. It makes it more of a child-friendly environment. And then we dress up in child-friendly smocks for the 5 to 11-year-olds. Always give lollipops and stickers for that age group as well. So that's kind of like an overview of what we've been doing for the last year, and particularly with the schools and the different age groups.
So it sounds like you've really been creative in your practice. Any other lessons learned for that age group that you could share as folks that may not have administered vaccines to that particular age group in the past look to get started providing that service?
And I think you mean the 5 to 11, right, John?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing we didn't mention is that I completed a pediatric general practice residency at a pediatric medical center. Mm-hmm. So I spent a year in pediatrics, and that, you know, has really helped to form my practice and has been very useful in the pandemic. And, you know, what the things that we use in pediatrics is various tools. The CDC has on their website how to hold a child safely to provide a safe vaccine. And you can get that link at the CDC website. So we want the child to be still, particularly in that 5 to 11 age group where it's developmentally, you know, normal for children in that age group to cry, to scream, to kick and resist a shot. So having, you know, training the staff first and foremost that this is what we're going to expect. We are going to get 5-year-olds that are going to sit down and sit in that chair by themselves and just put their arm out and not move. But the majority of 5-year-olds will not do that. And same thing for 9, 10-year-olds. You know, obviously, as they get older, each group, 10 and above, they're a little better than the 9 and below. 10 and above, developmentally, you can talk to them more and reason with them, but not every 10 and 11 year old can be reasoned with. And we've had some large 10, 11, and even 12 year olds that need to be held down. So you want them to be still, you need that arm still. They absolutely cannot move. We don't want to damage the muscle, the deltoid muscle. So we cannot have them move during the procedure. You know, as far as talking to them in 10 and above, you can talk to the kids. I do say that one of the things I always say for our staff and other pharmacists is speed is key. Because the longer you delay the conversation and the procedure, the more anxiety that builds up. And that can just make it worse. If they're more anxious and they're going to resist more, they could have a vasovagal reaction. So it is important to be really quick in your process when they come in, sit down. The first thing we do, I tell pharmacy students, is you have to learn to do a 15-second assessment. Greet the parent and the child, and you walk them into the room. And sometimes I, whisper to the parent when I see a little young one, are they going to be okay? Or how are they? Just real quick whisper. And you can tell, the parent may not even say anything, but they'll just give you a look like, oh dear, oh gosh. And you just know right then and there. So quickly, okay, dad, mom, have a seat on the chair. I want Johnny to sit on your lap. And I show them the CDC recommendation. So the child's back is facing the parent's chest, and then the parent puts their arms around the child. And if possible, the feet go between the legs. That, and I say if possible, because a stronger parent can hold a younger child with that appropriate hug by themselves, but a lot of parents can't, and they do need assistance. So we will ask for a second person to come in, and we can hear, as soon as we hear any screaming or crying, we just run down to the room and we go in and we help. So, an additional person will help. The way that our setup is, we have a hallway with rooms. Now we have a clinic because we are we built a point of care clinic, and we're doing PrEP and hepatitis C testing out of that clinic. So we have a hallway with rooms, and at the end of the hallway is where our pharmacist sort of manager sits and oversees the vaccines and handing them out. And so that pharmacist is the one that will run into the room and assist when necessary. And it's really just a quick, 30-second assist, hold them down real quickly. You might have to explain to the parent what's going on if they're not already familiar, and just explain this is the safest way if they're going to get a vaccine today.
Parents. Are you finding most of the parents of these children to be vaccinated, or are you running into a lot that aren't?
In the Bay Area, in San Francisco County, we have very high vaccination rates. I would say the majority of parents and that we're seeing in the 5 to 11 age group are definitely vaccinated. I have not ran into a parent that's been vaccinated. Now, I've vaccinated a few parents late in the game, but then their kids got vaccinated, shortly after that. Not the same day, because the parent is not ready for the child to get vaccinated. It's a conversation. But yeah, for in the San Francisco Bay Area, most of the parents in that age group are vaccinated. In the teen group, where we have teens that can communicate and express their desires and wants with the vaccine, there are families where the parent may not be vaccinated and the teen wants to get vaccinated. And so I've observed that, and I've observed, even at the last minute, the parent is trying to convince the teen to not get vaccinated.
Wow.
And that has happened, a few times. It's not very common, but I have seen it.
A lot of times, in the past, when pharmacists have gotten involved in administering vaccines to children, adolescents, pediatrics, there's been a little bit of pushback from the pediatric medical community. What have you seen in your practice? Is this something that you've encountered a lot? Has it been an opportunity for you to forge a closer working relationship with those providers? What have you seen?
Not too much. I think throughout the pandemic, I would say that it's been an opportunity for us to educate physicians. But for the most part, we do have a lot of support in our community here with pharmacists. I think what ends up being educational parts for us is sometimes physicians aren't aware that pharmacists can provide vaccines without a physician order. Mm-hmm. So that's something I still sometimes see. But, you know, in California, we've been providing vaccines for quite some time as pharmacists. Now, not in the younger age group. I think for us, I mean, we're so well known with our pediatric program that if anything, it's been, you know, more positive. And not, I would say most people have heard about our program as physicians or experienced it firsthand. So I have not had had pushback on that.
That's good to hear. You mentioned when we were talking earlier that you'd gotten some funding from the local jurisdiction, the local health department. Talk a little bit about your relationship with public health in your area out there. It sounds like it's a great relationship and has really opened up some doors for you.
Yeah, I would say it is a good relationship. It's not always been as collaborative. I think it's actually quite the opposite. You know, I would say today we are collaborative in vaccines, but it's been quite the opposite in terms of the road to get to where we are. I think that for community pharmacy, because, you know, the way that we practice medicine and pharmacy in this country, it's very decentralized, and you've got private, you know, pharmacies, and you have many hospitals and clinics that are in the public health system. So we're not part of the public health system per se. We're not we're private organizations, companies. And so that's been very disjointed and difficult, I think, really to provide care in this country for pharmacists, to really provide and practice the top of our license. It's taken, it's years, and obviously with the pandemic, it was a lot of advocacy on, we can do this, we want to do this, give us vaccines. I mean, even when we started giving vaccines last February, it was very, limited quantities on I don't even want to say it was a weekly basis. It was like, we got some and then we didn't get any for a few weeks. And so, my sort of advocacy came from this place of, these are our school clients. We've been working with them and we just want to serve them and give them vaccines. But I didn't have enough vaccine to give all my school clients in February. And, I just really watched the hospitals and the health system with the mass vaccination sites provide vaccines to my clients. And I just kept hearing how inconvenient it was for them to have to take a half day off and, drive across town and or in a city, they've got to deal with parking and go to a mass vaccination site. And that was frustrating for the school administrators, because the teachers and staff would literally take a half day off to get a vaccine. And so that was really disruptive. I think what we saw when we were able to go to the schools, and the few schools we did, in February, is that we can provide a few hundred vaccines in 4 hours and get like 95% of the staff vaccinated, and that is amazing. I mean, the other 5%, that took time. Those, were the people that were vaccine resistant, or maybe it was more than 5%. It could have been 10, back in February. And we eventually got them all vaccinated. The schools that we worked with, they have 100% vaccination rates for their employees, which is, really an amazing feat to get for a workplace setting without mandates. But, it did take time. We had to sit down and talk. I did a Zoom meeting. I did little, conversations with certain groups of staff and just answered questions to get them to closer to deciding that the vaccine was safe.
So Maria, before you, something you said really resonated with me, that you were, prior to COVID, you were providing other vaccines to these clients. Is that correct?
Actually, not. No, not prior to COVID. Oh, okay. I was providing testing. Actually, during COVID. So we were doing testing with them already. That's a very interesting area, actually. If you don't mind, I'd like to speak on it. Because sure. I think that what this pandemic has really opened my eyes to as a community pharmacy is that the COVID vaccine was the first vaccine, the first medication that I did not have to worry what the patient's insurance was. And that's what made it, you know, possible for us to go to these schools and sites or even have a vaccine clinic at the pharmacy and be able to vaccinate a few hundred people, you know, in a small amount of time, because for the first time, I did not have to worry about insurance and running that before. So we gather their insurance cards, but we know everybody's covered. The barrier that I realize is when they asked me to do flu vaccines, and we found out that a major insurance company that covers a lot of schools will not pay us to provide flu vaccine. So I think there's still more work to be done, but that is, you know, that's where we are with COVID vaccine. And I think that's really a great opportunity and a door in into providing.
Oh, I tell you, I really think COVID has shown a bright light on the relationship between community pharmacy and public health. And, you know, it's really kind of showcased what the relationship could be and hopefully will be in the future. What's going on with testing and immunizations and provision of antivirals, hopefully that's going to lead to other really good things down the road. Anything else that you'd like to add with regard to your experience with the pediatric adolescent population before we move on to another area?
I would just say that with pediatrics, you know, it can be daunting, but it is a lot of fun. It does take a little bit of training. We've made a couple of training videos. I'd encourage people to watch those. And, you know, just with the training and just getting a few tips that we talk about in the training videos can really give pharmacists the confidence to provide vaccines. And it is a lot of fun. And I say these kids and families have just been so wonderful to work with. And it just, you know, really, I guess, warms my heart when I get a thank you or a child writes me a letter or brings me some tiny little trinket that they've been carrying around for good luck and said, you know, I want to give this to you because it's brought good luck to me. And you need good luck. it just warms my heart what comes out of these kids' mouths. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, your passion and enthusiasm for working with that age group comes through loud and clear. And I'm glad you mentioned the videos. In fact, you've done a video and a webinar for NCPA, which is currently housed on our website. So we would definitely encourage our listeners to access that. There's some really good information. You did a great job with the two pieces that you graciously did for us, and we really appreciate that. And we really appreciate you being on the Move the Needle podcast today, providing lots of great information and insights about your experiences with the pediatric population. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure.
All right. So what we want to do now, we, you know, obviously talked about a number of really good things going on in the pharmacy. And unfortunately, you know, all this activity has led to a number of workplace issues. And I want to turn things back over to Ed to really talk about those and see what we need to do to try to alleviate some of these. There's some serious issues going on and they obviously need to be addressed, and a number of folks are looking at those. So, Ed, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, thank you, John. And Maria, thank you for your inspirational and insightful discussion on the pediatric space. It has always been a vision. I think John will support that as we have had such a rich history in pharmacy-provided immunizations to be able to immunize the entire family without having to fragment that care to different providers is wonderful to see. And hopefully that will stay with us as we move on to the future and we get past the pandemic, that pharmacy can continue to immunize the entire family. And John, all this activity, you're spot on, is led to busyness that we've never seen before. We hear that pharmacists, technicians, doctors, and nurses, and all of our frontline healthcare workers are inundated with a barrage of patients that never seems to stop. And pharmacists and doctors and nurses are all having a secondary challenge, is that some of them are actually coming down with the with COVID. This Omicron variant is relentless and attacking folks. It's the numbers are staggering, and that brings additional people to the pharmacy. But staffing has become an issue in all of healthcare. And what we'd like to be able to do is encourage our listeners, our pharmacy audience, both pharmacists and technicians, to take some time to balance, you know, your work and life issues. You need to understand and know that you can work within your practice site to address concerns over staffing and workload. You may not get the answer the first conversation you have that you're looking for, but you can't stop there because this affects not only you, but it affects your patients as well. So don't feel intimidated or pressured. You have a voice. You need to be respectful and use that voice and express your concerns. And I will tell you that I spent an array of time in chain pharmacy. I was a pharmacy manager at Walgreens. I also worked in corporate Walgreens. I worked in the grocery arena, and I've been on both sides of the conversation, and I understand what it takes to be successful in the busiest of pharmacies. And you can work through these issues with your extended team and really overcome them. And in addition, for those of you who feel another level of frustration, you also have a voice to influence and change the profession as well. And both John and I support organized pharmacy. Our national and state organizations are key and instrumental in representing every pharmacist and technician across the country. And if you've got issues that you want to express and you really want to have a voice, then join up with us. Get involved in your local, in your state, and your national organizations. I can't say enough about that. They have been there on the front lines with us. They have supported us, organized us. As Maria spoke about her relationship with public health and getting vaccine, it's the state associations that work with public health and form collaborations in all 50 states to make sure that pharmacy was included, that pharmacy had a seat at the table, and that pharmacy got to expand and get the recognition that we're seeing. So yes, we're all of us are very busy. All of us have frustration. That's across all of healthcare. However, you do have a voice both within your practice site and outside your practice site with organized pharmacy. And I'm a huge proponent of the state pharmacy organizations. I think that they work tirelessly on behalf of all pharmacists to help us in our struggles in our daily lives. And I'm taking charge of this conversation because John is, of course, part of a national organization that supports pharmacists and does a great job. And I will sing his praises every single day for all the great work that both John and his organization, NCPA, does. They've embraced the change of pharmacy. They support us from provider status to PBM reform, immunization practices, expanding the role of the technician, giving pharmacists more autonomy to work to the top of their experience and training, all very important things to advance the profession of pharmacy. I want to thank all of our listeners for their continued support. This is our fifth episode, and we've gotten some great feedback and some wonderful listeners. We've developed ourselves a great following and audience, and we thank you all for that.